Good morning and welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It's Thursday, May 7th, 2026, and this is our AI edition. I'm Maya.
And I'm Alex. And honestly, Maya, it feels less like an addition and more like a fundamental realignment. We're charting the next industrial revolution live.
Dramatic even for you, Alex. But you're not wrong. This week, we're kicking off with the great agentic shift, the rise of autonomous workers, and the new corporate order it's forging. Anthropic is surging, OpenAI is pivoting. What does that actually mean for the future of work?
It's a bit like the South Sea bubble, isn't it? Massive investment, hype cycles, a scramble for limited resources, except this time the resources compute.
Speaking of which, massive compute spends and a very real hardware bottleneck. We'll break down where the investment is flowing and who's getting squeezed.
And then we dive into intelligence in the wild. The impact on medicine is staggering, pushing boundaries we didn't even know existed.
Staggering is an understatement. Physics breakthroughs, news credibility, it's a brave new world. Honestly, Alex, I didn't expect the news angle to be this wild.
Consider this, that's why we have the show. Let's get started.
Jack Driscoll built a fully functional coding agent integrated directly into Gmail using Claude, and that, frankly, feels like a better headline than anything happening in consumer AI right now. Let's talk about the great agentic shift, moving from chatbots to actual autonomous workers.
It's no longer about what the model can do in isolation, but how it's harnessed in the ecosystems that spring up around it. The Myth of Model Wars piece really nails that point. The strategic value is migrating to the agentic harness, not the model architecture itself. We've seen this shift in other industries. LLMs are rapidly becoming interchangeable assets, almost like corn or soy, and the premium will be on the preparation, RAG, tool calling, complex integration.
Corn or soy is aggressive. But I get it. If GPT-5.5 and Opus are functionally similar, the differentiators aren't internal parameters, but how easily you can bolt them onto existing workflows.
There's a signal here. That's where the observability and orchestration layers become critical. The explosion of autonomous agents creates a complexity tax, as the Myth of Model Wars article points out, and companies like Datadog or Splunk are perfectly positioned to capitalize on the need for sticky management tools, monitoring, governance, agent-to-agent communication. Think of it as necessary infrastructure.
So less building a better brain and more building a better nervous system for these brains.
That's a very apt analogy. And it's more than just monitoring. The LangChain piece highlights the essential agentic formula, model, harness, environment. You need all three. But as these agents become more independent, possessing their own identities and persistent memories, like OpenClaw's Tom, the environment becomes exponentially more important.
Independent agents with their own credentials, that feels like a potential regulatory nightmare.
It absolutely is. And that's where the Beatway shift comes in, a move from business to human to business to agent. Laura Stigioni clearly articulates that security tools need to be designed for machine consumption via APIs, not human dashboards. Headless infrastructure is the future, integrating directly into developer workflows like GitHub Copilot.
Headless, so the interface effectively disappears. We're talking software as a pure utility, accessed entirely by other programs.
Worth noting, the researchers from the Digioni piece frame it as step one AI, chatbots as assistants, evolving to step two, agentic independent task performance, and now to this headless era where coding agents are the operating system. The human role transforms from manual practitioner to orchestrator.
Okay, so if the agents are doing the work, what's the economic implication? Is this the mass unemployment scenario everyone's worried about?
It's not so simple. The why agents make every job a startup host argues it's less about time saving and more about unbounded capacity. The removal of time constraints reveals a limitless backlog of previously impossible work. But managing that capacity requires entirely new roles, agent engineers, context librarians, coordination architects.
Kierkegaardian dizziness from infinite choice is a phrase. I'm stealing that. But agent engineers wiring up Salesforce. That sounds remarkably prosaic for a revolution.
It might sound prosaic, but the bottleneck isn't model quality anymore. It's the human constraint, judgment, verification, context switching. Agent engineering is about bridging that gap. And it's where a huge amount of economic value will be created.
So less building a new AI and more building the plumbing to connect AI to everything.
And that plumbing is becoming increasingly sophisticated. Harrison Chase of LangChain emphasizes the shift from synchronous to asynchronous, event-driven subagents. It's about managing long-running background tasks without constant human intervention, much more complex, multi-threaded autonomous operations.
Asynchronous, meaning they operate independently, flagging things for review but not requiring instant feedback.
And this necessitates a move towards open source models. Chase argues that always-on agents are economically unsustainable with frontier models. The continuous execution every few minutes adds up. OpenClaw was a hobbyist phase, but harness as a service platforms are democratizing access.
Speaking of democratizing, Jaden from Revitalizing Business Apps says Claude Code and Cowork now let non-developers build functional apps using AI agents.
That's huge. The barrier to entry has collapsed. AI agents are handling DevOps tasks, automating database setup, configuring accounts. It's no longer about coding expertise, it's about vision. We're seeing a surge in vibe-coded apps, a structural shift in the App Store away from gaming.
So the App Store is becoming a productivity tool. That feels like a weird but potentially lucrative inversion.
It is.
And it's further evidence of this shift from model-centric to harness-centric development. Software defensibility is now about contextual orchestration, accessing deep project-level metadata and personalized user history.
Context, context, context. It keeps coming back to that.
The pattern is clear, Descript's Laura Burkhauser articulates it beautifully. Orchestrator agents intelligently navigate a fragmented landscape of specialized models to hit specific user bullseyes regarding cost, quality, and context. Think of them as AI-powered project managers.
And the parallel need for control layers, governance systems to audit, secure, and recover agentic workflows at machine speed. That sounds stressful.
It is.
Establishing trust is critical for large-scale deployment. And that's where the IBM pivot to a governance layer is interesting, acting as a centralized control plane for regulated enterprises.
Anthropic's focus on specialized agents for financial workflows, KYC, auditing, and their potential $30 billion ARR run rate. That's a pretty compelling use case.
It's evidence of this broader trend. General purpose models are giving way to specialized workflows and the supporting governance infrastructure. It's the reference architectures, pre-built agents with integrated skills that are driving adoption.
Less building the AI and more building the pre-configured AI solutions for specific industries.
And it's fundamentally changing the nature of software design. The AI agent and the human user are granted access to the exact same low-level toolset, ensuring everything is reversible and adjustable.
Like full transparency and control, eliminating the black box problem.
The implication runs deeper, scaling the agentic harness. The environment and tools provided is often less effective than targeted scaffolding. The researchers found that a basic bash terminal and prompt compaction can be as effective as more complex systems. It's not always about bells and whistles.
Less sophisticated AI brain and more give it a terminal and let it run.
In many cases, yes. But the biggest limitation remains temporal context, the absence of token budget awareness. Providing agents with data on used versus available tokens acts as a heuristic for time management, analogous to how human professionals pace themselves.
A token budget, so they literally don't know how long they've been running.
The data tells a story, the ultimate vision as articulated by DiGioni, is a headless era where coding agents act as a new operating system. This fundamentally decouples software value from its UI.
So the agentic era is akin to a slow but complete shift in the architecture of the human nervous system, a decoupling of sensory input from the processes that occur deep within. It's a restructuring of the brain itself.
An excellent analogy. The infinite backlog of previously impossible tasks, the rise of agent engineers and context librarians, the agentic burnout from high-frequency oversight, it's a fundamental restructuring of how we work and how we think about productivity. We're not just automating tasks, we're automating intelligence. And that creates both incredible opportunity and profound cognitive challenges.
Which all ties back to the initial point, the focus isn't on the models themselves anymore. It's the environments they operate in, the workflows they're embedded in, and the humans orchestrating the chaos. And that's a shift that's going to reshape not just the tech industry, but the entire economy. But the real interesting question may be whether we can build the infrastructure, the architectures of support, fast enough to prevent a full-scale cognitive collapse. You know what I noticed this week? Everyone in AI seems to be trying to become a consulting firm. Like overnight.
It's a significant shift. The major labs, OpenAI and Anthropic primarily, are clearly moving beyond pure model development and towards a last-mile service model, as the reports indicate. We're seeing them prioritize deployment and organizational change management, recognizing that even the best tech is useless without effective integration.
Last mile. Translation, they realize selling a brain isn't enough, you have to explain to people how to use it. And apparently that's harder than building the brain.
It's a telling detail. The emergence of OpenAI's deployment company and Anthropic's joint venture with Blackstone and Goldman Sachs, backed by $1.5 billion, illustrates a strategic pivot. They're adopting what's been described as a Palantir-style forward-deployed engineering approach.
Palantir, the data spy company. Great branding. So they're sending people into companies to make sure their AI doesn't break everything.
Essentially, it addresses the core challenge of bridging the gap between raw model performance and tangible operational workflows. Anthropic's venture specifically targets areas like clinical documentation and healthcare, suggesting they're not just deploying models, but actively shaping the processes around them.
right? Because a doctor's workflow is notoriously flexible. Let's talk numbers. I saw Anthropic is flying. What's the latest ARR?
As of April 2026, Anthropic's annualized recurring revenue has reached $30 billion. This is a huge jump from $1 billion in January 2025, and they're reportedly doubling revenue every 6 weeks. That growth rate makes comparisons to established players like AWS or Salesforce almost irrelevant.
Doubling every 6 weeks. That's absurd. And OpenAI, are they just watching this happen?
Not watching, but pivoting in their own direction. OpenAI's $10 billion deployment company is designed to bypass traditional sales cycles, utilizing private equity firms to secure distribution across their portfolios. They're offering a guaranteed 17.5% annual return to incentivize adoption.
A guaranteed return? So they're paying people to use their AI. That feels unsustainable.
It's a radical financial engineering strategy. The logic is that even at 17.5%, the increased token consumption and enterprise integration will outweigh the cost. It's about securing distribution at scale and quickly. They are also attempting to replicate the Palantir-style operational model, embedding developers within client organizations.
So two strategies to the same end, forced integration. One is here's a bunch of money, do what we say. The other is here's a guy, live with him. How is this affecting their bottom lines, though?
Anthropic is now generating more revenue than OpenAI, and importantly, is doing so with significantly less capital expenditure. Reports indicate they've achieved comparable revenue to OpenAI while spending 4 times less on training runs. This suggests a more sustainable business model and faster path to profitability.
Okay, so Anthropic is the efficient one, OpenAI is the aggressive one. Is this down to the technology itself or something else?
Increasingly, it appears to be a strategic difference. Anthropic is laser-focused on enterprise and developer spending, charging higher price points around $1,000 a month compared to OpenAI's reliance on a large base of lower-paying free users and lower-tier subscriptions. They've strategically pivoted to vertical integration in the financial sector, deploying reference architectures specifically tailored to automate labor-intensive workflows like underwriting and KYC.
Reference architectures, pre-built AI solutions, basically. Plug-and-play brains for bankers. It sounds boring, but apparently lucrative.
Something to flag here, this focus on quantifiable productivity gains, replacing full-time employee roles for around $200 a month, is reshaping the valuation narrative. It's moving away from consumer AI hype towards a demonstrable ROI business case. And it's working.
And that ROI is driving Amazon's investment, right? I saw they've committed a lot of money.
Stepping back, Anthropic has secured $5 billion from Amazon, alongside a $100 billion cloud spending commitment over the next decade, bringing their total investment to $13 billion. This further solidifies their position and provides a critical counterweight to Microsoft's influence.
Counterweight to Microsoft? Because OpenAI is now on AWS too, breaking Microsoft's exclusivity. Which feels confusing.
It's a strategic play by both sides. For OpenAI, it's about bypassing Azure bottlenecks and expanding enterprise access. For Amazon, it's a direct competitive strike against Anthropic, leveraging their expanded OpenAI deal to integrate models into Bedrock and displace Anthropic as the preferred frontier model provider. It's also about exploiting the existing lock-in effect of enterprises on AWS infrastructure. Janelle Gale pointed out AI Box couldn't easily switch to Azure even with the appeal of OpenAI's tools because of that lock-in.
Both companies are basically using each other to fight their cloud wars. It feels messy. And where does this leave us?
It leaves us with a clear shift in power dynamics. Anthropic is building a too-important-to-fail defensive moat by embedding its models into the foundational plumbing of the U.S. financial system, potentially creating systemic dependency that would make aggressive government regulation or antitrust action economically catastrophic. They are demonstrating a fundamentally different business model than OpenAI.
Okay, so Anthropic is quietly becoming essential infrastructure, while OpenAI is trying to force its way in with financial incentives and human chaperones. One's a slow, deliberate lock-in, the other is a shotgun wedding.
A succinct and accurate analogy. The contrast between OpenAI's internal focus on user numbers, missing a 1 billion weekly active user goal, and Anthropic's targeting of high-value enterprise customers is creating a potential inflection point in market leadership. Anthropic's revenue growth, driven by enterprise and developer spending at higher price points, is enabling far more rapid revenue accumulation.
So Anthropic is winning, but OpenAI's not losing yet. They're just playing a different game with very different rules. It feels like this is less about which AI is better and more about how they sell it.
Two things stand out. Anthropic's revenue growth trajectory from $1 billion at the end of 2024 to nearly $40 billion in April 2026 demonstrates a fundamentally different business model that prioritizes enterprise value over user acquisition. In short, Anthropic is building a business while OpenAI is still building a brand.
The new corporate order in AI is being defined not by technical superiority, but by financial engineering and strategic infrastructure deployment. So apparently, Chinese labs are actively prolonging the lifespan of older NVIDIA GPUs because porting code to new architectures is too much work. That's a feature, not a bug in the compute arms race.
It's a fascinating case of geopolitical forces influencing hardware demand, actually. Philip Culley pointed out that this sustained interest in Hopper, despite Blackwell's release, demonstrates the significant investment required to transition to new silicon. It's not merely a technical issue. It's an economic one, particularly for labs facing export controls, who have built substantial open-source optimization around older generations. That creates a stickiness that NVIDIA benefits from, further solidifying their ecosystem dominance.
Ecosystem dominance. Right up. Like building a walled garden around the most expensive shovels in a gold rush.
We can trace that further. The compute arms race isn't just about securing the raw hardware. It's about controlling the entire supply chain, the tooling, the software, the talent, the pre-trained models. NVIDIA's CUDA platform is a key component of that, making it incredibly difficult for competitors to gain traction. Tuhin Srivastava highlighted how NVIDIA's strength isn't just in silicon, but in its ability to scale supply and leverage that developer ecosystem.
Let's quantify difficult. We're talking about $805 billion in hyperscaler capex this year, potentially $1.1 trillion next year, just to chase the intelligence tail.
And the majority of that is flowing directly into the pockets of hardware providers. Both OpenAI's $50 billion spend and the projected $600 billion pledge through 2030 represent a substantial capital transfer, as evidenced by Samsung's eightfold profit increase driven by AI memory demand. That's not incremental growth, that's a fundamental reshaping of the semiconductor industry.
A reshaping that's already hitting critical bottlenecks. I read about GPU rental prices going up 40% in 6 months, and even Apple Mac minis being hard to get.
It's a classic demand-supply imbalance, exacerbated by the speed at which AI models are scaling. The host in The Week AI Grew Up noted this transition from a subsidized, flat-rate pricing model to usage-based billing, driven by token scarcity and compute constraints. GitHub's shift is symptomatic of that broader trend. They're trying to prevent high-intensity users from subsidizing the low-intensity ones. It's a sign of real constraint.
So the math is simple. Everyone wants more compute. Supply is fixed. Prices go up. What happens when you can't actually build enough?
That's where the compute scarcity era comes into play, as Anthropic and Google are realizing. Securing 10 gigawatts of compute capacity and a $40 billion commitment to do so isn't just about model architecture anymore. It's about access to energy, data center infrastructure, and a reliable operational framework. Tuhin Srivastava identified a dual supply crunch, physical compute and reliable data center operators.
Operational crunch, I like that. It's one thing to lease the servers, it's another to run them at scale.
So here's the picture. He describes a proliferation of grifty new cloud providers, lacking the sophisticated engineering required for mission-critical inference. It's not enough to simply have GPUs. You need the expertise to maintain strict SLAs and high utilization rates. That's why securing GPU contracts now requires 3 to 5 year terms and 20 to 30% total contract value prepayments.
Meaning acquiring compute capacity is less like buying a server and more like a long-term bond with a questionable yield.
That's a fair assessment. It fundamentally alters the working capital requirements for infrastructure providers. The entire financial landscape is being reshaped. And this isn't just about scaling up existing hardware, it's about diversification.
Diversification how? Building our own chips.
That's one piece of it, and it's accelerating the need for specialized inference systems. Philip Culley predicted that 2026 could be the year of ownership of intelligence, with companies increasingly bringing AI infrastructure in-house. This is driving interest in ASICs like Talos and the disaggregation of compute resources, moving away from broadly capable systems to workload-specific optimizations.
So a future of bespoke AI hardware. Before we get lost in the silicon weeds, let's remember the problem at the beginning. OpenAI is spending $50 billion this year, Samsung is making a fortune, and everyone's scrambling for GPUs. What does this mean for the models themselves?
It's creating a pressure to optimize model architecture for efficiency, which is driving interest in specialized approaches like DeepSeek's. They're exploring non-standard attention mechanisms, creating a long-term strategic risk for NVIDIA, as hardware vendors that fail to adapt may find their chips less efficient for the next generation of models. This is especially true for inference.
Inference? The step everyone always forgets about.
So here's the picture, as Tuhin Srivastava notes, the market is rapidly evolving from vanilla models to custom post-trained models, which further amplifies the need for specialized hardware and a robust inference cloud. The competitive advantage is shifting from chip architecture to supply chain dominance and ecosystem density, and the ability to efficiently run those models.
Okay, so we've got a massive capital transfer, hardware bottlenecks, a scramble for energy, the rise of specialized architectures, and a move towards custom models. It feels unsustainable. Like a runaway train.
It certainly presents significant challenges. However, it's important to remember the scale of the opportunity. OpenAI's long-term goal of reaching $100 billion in annual ad revenue by 2030 is driving much of this investment. That's a massive incentive for overcoming these constraints.
All right, let's put it all together. We've dissected the entire compute arms race, but one thing this conversation really hasn't answered is, what happens when the laws of physics actually kick in? Morgan Stanley raised the hyperscaler CapEx forecast to $805 billion, but Tyler Cohen and Dylan Patel are skeptical about whether trillion-dollar scaling is even possible. Is this all just a really expensive delusion? Alex, we're seeing AI move from automating tasks to fundamentally changing how high-stakes fields operate. Medicine physics news. It feels like a collision between expertise and algorithms. Which side are you betting on?
The framing is a bit off, actually. It's not a competition, but a transition. Expertise isn't going away, it's being redefined. We've already seen this in physics, specifically, with OpenAI's models like GPT-5 moving from productivity tool to superhuman collaborator, resolving problems like single-minus gluon tree amplitudes that humans couldn't crack for over a year.
Superhuman is loaded. It sounds like physicists are now outsourcing their brain power.
It's less about outsourcing and more about bypassing the human bottleneck in complex calculations. The real limitation isn't the idea of a solution, but the time and effort required for manual derivation. Codex simulating the SYK model in 10 minutes is a prime example. That's not replacing a physicist, it's letting them focus on what they do best.
Which, according to Lupseska, is high-level strategy intuition. So identifying the right needle in the haystack rather than sifting through it.
The data tells a story, even that's evolving. The Washington Post's Haystacker model demonstrates how AI is shifting the journalist's role toward interrogation, finding specific insights within existing datasets. It's not about replacing research, but amplifying it.
Okay, so less HAL 9000, more incredibly fast research assistant. But there's a downside, right? Brandon at Atomic AI talked about the problem of taste, AI generating so many results it's hard to know what's meaningful.
And we're already seeing it in scientific archives. The influx of AI slop on archive necessitates rigorous verification standards. That shifts the bottleneck, as Lupseska points out, from generation to verification. The Gravity paper needed massive human validation of ChatGPT 5.2 Pro outputs.
It's like trying to find a single decent recipe on a website that's generated a million variations of slightly off lasagna.
That's a surprisingly apt analogy. But it's more than just filtering noise. It's about epistemological shifts. If AI handles the arduous calculations, how do we ensure students develop foundational intuition? It threatens the very rites of passage in physics education.
Are we raising a generation of physicists who can ask the right questions but can't actually do the math?
That's the core concern. But it also creates opportunity. LLMs can act as a cognitive bridge across the research desert, shrinking the gap between coursework and the frontier of active research. And that may necessitate a shift toward interactive papers, a integrated knowledge bases, as Lupseska suggests, where knowledge isn't static but expandable.
Vineet Khosla framed journalism similarly, a shift from a fixed medium to a discipline of truth-seeking.
Something to flag here, the real opportunity and the looming challenge, is moving beyond static output to dynamic agent-to-agent ecosystems. The Model Context Protocol could allow verified news organizations to provide data streams directly to autonomous AI agents. Within 6 to 12 months, the integration of these reasoning models will catalyze a structural transformation in research methodology. The question isn't if AI will change these fields, but how we ensure the quality of information within that evolving landscape.
Stepping back from the specifics of hyperscaler CapEx, the $805 billion this year, the potential $1.1 trillion next year, even OpenAI pledging $600 billion through 2030, it feels like we've been mapping the early stages of a fundamental corporate restructuring. It's not just about building AI, it's about deploying it, integrating it, and crucially making it demonstrably productive. Anthropic's success, leaping to $30 billion ARR, isn't just a revenue story. It's a signal that value is shifting to organizations solving real-world problems, not just model development.
The pattern is clear, that shift necessitates a new kind of infrastructure. It's less about a model wars, as we discussed, and more about controlling the entire intelligence supply chain, tooling, talent, the pre-trained models themselves, and overwhelmingly, the compute. That $10 billion Amazon investment in Anthropic isn't just capital, it's a strategic lock on resources. We're seeing the emergence of vertically integrated intelligence ecosystems, and the compute arms race reflects a profound capital transfer, creating a kind of complexity tax for anyone not at the center of those ecosystems.
Which brings us back to the human element. Everyone's talking about AI doing more, but what does that mean for expertise? It's not replacement, it's a restructuring. I remember the conversation about medicine and physics, bypassing human bottlenecks, freeing up scientists and doctors to focus on higher-level thinking, but also potentially eroding foundational intuition. The risk of a research desert if the initial cognitive labor is outsourced to agents.
That's the crux of it. We talked about building a better brain versus building a better nervous system. The brain represents strategic insight, the nervous system represents execution. The current fervor is overwhelmingly focused on expanding the nervous system, creating these headless infrastructures that run autonomously. But without a parallel investment in the capacity to validate that output, to ask the right context questions, we risk building incredibly efficient systems that are wrong or worse, systematically biased. The looming question is informational integrity.
And the data keeps piling up, the infinite backlog growing, managed by these async agents. It's fascinating and a little unsettling to think that companies are offering guaranteed returns, 17.5% from OpenAI, just to get you to adopt. It feels almost unsustainable.
It's a bet on future productivity, but as we discussed, it's a bet predicated on continuous growth and perhaps more importantly, continuous infrastructure expansion. There's a parallel here to the early internet. The initial phase of euphoric adoption, followed by a period of consolidation and a sobering assessment of the underlying economics. And while it's tempting to see the emerging ownership model, bringing AI in-house as a solution that simply shifts the logistical challenges to a broader set of organizations.
So where does that leave us? If I were to summarize, it feels like we're witnessing a systemic shift toward agentic workflows, driven by compute scarcity and the emergence of these incredibly powerful vertically integrated ecosystems. The next few years will be defined by who controls those ecosystems, and perhaps more critically, who can successfully navigate the problem of taste, the ability to discern signal from AI slop, to validate the output and prevent the erosion of foundational expertise.
It's like looking out at a vast, unexplored ocean. The currents are powerful, the depths are unknown, and the map is constantly being redrawn. And within that ocean, the question of token budget awareness, ensuring these agents aren't simply running indefinitely without a sense of cost or consequence, will become paramount.
Watching Anthropic will be key. Their focus on enterprise value feels like a more sustainable path. And frankly, understanding the implications for education, ensuring the next generation develops the capacity for strategic interrogation, is critical.
Stepping back, it's a year of ownership of intelligence, and the companies that invest not just in deploying that intelligence, but in understanding its limitations will be the ones that thrive.
Thanks for joining us this week. We'll be diving into the implications for the financial sector next time.